This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Welcome into another episode of Musings on Madison here on the Second City Hockey Podcast Network. I'm your host, Dave Melton, site manager for the website. You can find me at SCH_DaveM. The main account for the website is at 2ND City Hockey. And all of my line mates are with me this evening. Up first, the analytics darling of Second City Hockey, Shepard Price.
What's up? I went to the best concert of my life on Monday, and it was Churches. Churches is really good, but also Lauren Mayberry is Lauren Mayberry.
What type of venue it was in St. Louis, I assume?
Yes.
What?
Like 2,000 people, maybe.
Okay. That's not bad. That's not bad.
Yeah, no.
So big fan of Churches now, I guess that's where we're at. Churches with the
V. I mean, big fan of Churches with a V since high school, basically.
Okay. So I figured we were going to immediately dive into your Detroit Lions getting off to Schneid finally.
Well, yeah, it's a nice feeling that they're not going to be the first 0-16-1 team. But there's work to do.
Well, I imagine when you get your first win of the season in week 12, there's going to be a good amount of work to do. So,
Jared Goff. I don't talk about the Lions while Jared Goff is our quarterback.
Yeah, that's probably for the best. By the way, Shepard's on Twitter at Shepard Price. Also with us this evening, you can find him on Twitter at Mill182, and he is the Second City Hockey. What Trent Reznor is the Nine Inch Nails, it is Mill Savage.
I got that.
You'll have to speak up. I'm wearing a towel.
You know, that's a Simpsons line that I feel like doesn't get enough play at all. But I'm trying to work it into my routine more often.
Yeah, that's a good way to answer the phone.
Yeah, highly recommend. Also with us this evening, she's not on Twitter, but you can find all her stuff at secondcityhockey.com under the name LBR, and she is the Second City Hockey bulletin wall of text. It is Betsy.
I've spent the last week trying to figure out why bathroom vanities cost so much money. They're just cabinets. Why does it cost so much?
If you don't get the marble topped gold and plated one.
No, I can reuse my granite. Like that's safe. The vanity part is expensive. They're for one that doesn't look like crap, they're $600 by themselves. Why?
Do they score more than 2 goals a game?
Probably not because they're inanimate objects, but you never know.
The Hawks could use an inanimate carbon rod and it would score more.
Wow. We're really, wow. really ramping up the optimism early on in this episode. I appreciate it.
Did you see the tweet I got last night?
Which one?
Where it was like, do you even like the Hawks? Only negativity from this account.
I've gotten like, that a few times as well. And I, my response in the last like 4 years has been, have you been watching this team? Like they're
right. One, it just needs to be that Will Smith meme. It's like him being like Vanna White towards the Blackhawks and being like, have you been watching? Come on.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't have any objections to that, to getting that response. I'm like, I don't know what to tell you. I've been
just like, yo, you new here, dude.
Yeah. Like I know what this team would look like when it's like contending for titles. And it does not look like that now, nor has it looked like that for about 6 years.
Most would agree.
We're baby steps improving.
We are.
At some point I'd like toddler steps and then maybe like pre-K steps. Like at some point it's gotta be a little bit.
I need the Forrest Gump, like run. You need the braces breaking off his legs and that stuff. Yeah, because like we're overdue. Like we've like I'm not saying the Hawks isn't we. I'm saying like us who've been watching them. Like It's like we're due for something.
Well, and I guess that's a perfect segue into why we have gathered this late afternoon / early evening hours. We're recording this here on Wednesday, so imagine most people will probably be listening to this on Thursday or whatever. But I put together this Number Munchers article because we got to the equal distant point between the Colleton and King eras. I don't think that's the right use of the word equidistant, but whatever. The point being that Jeremy Colleton coached the team for 12 games, and after the games over the weekend, Derek King had been coaching the team for 12 games and dove deep into the numbers. And from a team-wide perspective, like if you just look at a lot of the counts, there's not really a lot of good things that have changed from just a pure like gross number perspective. But if you start diving into the rates at which the Hawks were allowing chances against and goals against and shots against and all those other things against, the rate at which teams are doing that to the Blackhawks went way, way down. Like they're top 10 in pretty much every category that natural stat trick tracks, including shot attempts, shots against, goals against, expected goals against, all of them. So I guess the thing I wanted to bring to the panel this afternoon / evening is whether or not they can sustain this type of hockey over the course of whatever's left for the rest of the season. Because under Derek King, they are 8-5, which isn't a terrible record. And if you stayed at that pace for an entire season, you would be a playoff team. Now, I don't know. I would wager pretty heavily that would not be enough for the Hawks to overcome the dreadful start they had in the first 12 games of the season. But, I mean, I guess if you're trying to find a really, really rose-tinted pair of glasses to look at this team with, you could say, well, they lay the foundation this season for maybe having more success next season. That's my optimistic take for the day. So what I'm going to open it up to the panel, we'll start with Shay, as we usually do. Is this idea of this low event hockey that the Hawks have been playing, where they don't get a ton of shots and goals and everything else themselves, but they also don't really let them up that much? Is that a sustainable figure for or sustainable model for winning in the NHL?
Defensively, yeah. Look at the Islanders the last few years, and this is the style of hockey they play. And problem
that's the poster child for this, and I guess the New Jersey Devils would be from like the 90s and the 2000s.
Yes, it's very boring, and it's not fun to watch, and I don't like it, but it's sustainable. But the problem is that the Islanders have a much better offense than the Blackhawks do, and that's what helped power them partially to the playoffs. They had really good goaltending, and also just like Matt Barzal and Beauvillier and Anders Lee, who's just a goal scoring machine. It's like watch him play, and he's just scoring two goals a night.
That's where I kind of like I can talk myself into this idea working, because like the Hawks, like you mentioned, all those players, the Hawks have Patrick Kane, the Hawks have Alex DeBrincat, Dominic Kubalik's a 30 goal guy when he's scoring, and Taves is not going to go score goalless all season, I hope.
And yet they're barely averaging over two goals a night, and that's not sustainable. True. That's the unsustainable part of this, is that the Blackhawks offense is so bad. And part of that is probably due for regression positively, because their shooting percentage is probably insanely low.
It's but progression to the means coming for this team, we hope.
Yeah. But well, right now, it's horrible. Like, I don't want to watch them.
No,
they're boring.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's kind of a pick your poison situation. Would you rather watch a team be, I don't even know if they were exciting for the first month because they got their asses kicked so badly every night. I'd rather watch a team lose 7-6 than lose 2-1, but they weren't winning. They weren't losing 7-6. They were losing 7-2. So
yeah,
it was
exciting for the other team.
I guess. So yeah, it looked like fun to be a fan of the team playing against the Hawks for much of October. So I'm going to swing this around to Betsy because she mentioned in the pregame that she had some numbers related to this that were talking about the teams that play a more low event defense first style and how what they did to make it work, I think was the idea. Or I'll just let this, I'll let you take the floor because I can't remember exactly how you worded it.
I was going to argue that, so the Islanders are the example of low event hockey, but they actually, like, the Blackhawks still haven't come out positively on the shares side of things, like you mentioned in your numbers munchers. The Islanders did. So even though they were low event, they're like, their like expected goal shares were always at like 52-53%.
So they were controlling the majority of the play and the
Well, I mean, they would be break even on shot attempts usually, but their quality and scoring chances would be the majority. So they didn't, you know, everything was low, but it worked out in their favor. It's not what the Blackhawks are doing right now because the Blackhawks are still like their shares are still so bad. So they have to figure out how to balance it. And even the Islanders, like, so right now the Blackhawks for the full season are at like, you know, 2.12, I want to say, goals per game. In the King era, if you just count regulation goals, they're under two goals a game. They're like 1.9, which is kind of sad. Like that is a really, really low number. You look at teams like the Islanders or like the Stars or even the Kings of the golden eras, every single one of them scored at a rate of 2.5 or more.
Right now the Hawks are at 2.24 goals per game in all 25 from the season.
Yeah. So that may not seem like a big deal, but it's way more than you would think, you know, like over the course of a season, that's just ridiculous. So I was trying to, I think Lazarus had a thing that like, they're at like 1.3 at 5-on-5 or something. Like it was, these were some really like distressingly. Like,
I remember we had the stat that like, it was beaten into my brain because it got mentioned so many times that in the first month of the season, they were like minus 12 goal differential at 5-on-5. Like they were getting outscored at 5-on-5 so badly it was comical. And
right, and that was mostly just because their offense was so bad at 5-on-5.
Yeah, but like the Islanders last year, the Islanders year before that, both of them, they were, last year was 2.71 goals, so almost three goals. Mm-hmm. And then the same thing that Shea was saying is like, it works if your offense is actually driving too. The Blackhawks aren't driving offense much at all. They had like two games where they hit double digit like high danger chances with a good balance of score, like regular general scoring chances, but outside of those two games, nada.
Yeah,
and so, in both of those games, I don't really think they looked that dangerous outside of a Kane here or a DeBrincat here or a Hagel doing something, kind of maybe a Strome or a Taves or Doc occasionally, but beyond that you're like, okay.
Well, I've pulled this up on Natural Stat Trick. The last month in the Derek King era, which is a month and 2 days now, going back to November 6th, they have allowed 18 goals against at 5-on-5 play. That's the lowest number in the NHL. That's good. Yeah. They've scored 19 goals at 5-on-5 play. That's the third lowest in the NHL. in that last month, with only the Flyers and the Islanders worse. So they're, yeah, they're just not, it's again, I think I used the word overcorrection a few times on the last episode, where it seems like they've gone so far back to defense that the offense doesn't thrive at all. And this is where I'll throw this around to Mill. Just, I guess it's kind of the same theme of what we're discussing here, but is there a way to make this work? Or I guess, or maybe how do you make it work to where you're not giving up so many chances, but you're not completely sacrificing the offense?
I think that's a lot of, and I know we keep talking about this on, you know, every day, but it's a lot of strategy, but it's also a lot of like usage with the lines, not just matchups, but just like how guys, you know, like everybody has to play their own spot, know where they need to be in transition. And I think it comes back around to their neutral zone play. Like, they're just not very good exiting and entering the zone, and then that you can't set up camp and cycle. So, but this has been a problem for a very long time. I just don't think we talked about it as much because the defense was so bad. And also, they would score in transition because that was the only way they could, but they don't really get those kind of rushes now.
Yeah, I just, it's just, it doesn't, I think I tweeted it after the last game that they won, which was the shootout game against, not the Islanders, it was the shootout win over the Capitals, I think, that like the Hawks have won. No, it was the shootout win after the Islanders won. Like, they're 8-4 under King, but it just doesn't feel like they're like flourishing. Like, it feels every win is so, so difficult to get. And the games that they lose, like, aren't, they don't get blown out as much anymore, but they also, like, they don't inspire a lot of confidence that, you know, they get down behind, they fall behind a goal or two and you're like, yeah, that's probably going to do it. It's like watching a shitty Bears game, if we're being honest with ourselves, but, or a Lions
game. Well, it kind of, it doesn't feel like they have Kane, DeBrincat, Kubalik, Taves, you know, so on and so forth. Like, it feels like they have a bunch of third liners who can't score.
Yeah. And that's, they don't have that. Like, they have plenty of third liners who can't score. Don't get me wrong, but they also have Alex DeBrincat and Patrick Kane and Kubalik. And DeBrincat's actually been scoring out of his ass. Like, the whole, he's been on fire pretty much since the season started. So I guess this is, and again, this feels like a little bit of a chicken and egg type of argument, but it's, can you take what the, are the Blackhawks struggling on offense because their star players aren't scoring? Or are they struggling on offense because the system is suffocating their star players and preventing them from scoring?
Or are they not scoring because they have no depth scoring because Derek King wants to continue to play Reese Johnson for some reason?
It's a little column A, B, and C.
Well, I think like to Shea's point, like those kind of guys, if you're going to have them in the lineup, I'm not saying they have to tilt the ice the way like Hossa could, but they have to have that kind of defensive mindset where they're gonna, okay, we're gonna get the puck into the other zone and set up for a face off and then get our ass off the ice. But they're not doing that. They're just kind of out there, like, you know, floating around.
Yeah, like, I'm looking at like the opposition. Like, if you go to at Natural Stat Trick's website, they have it listed where if you go to the opposition tab, you can see who was on the ice most against certain players. And against Artemi Panarin, the best offensive player on the Rangers, the top, it looks like the top, it was either the dock line or the fourth line, which is Ilya Slavin, were on the ice the most. And like, I like see like Patrick Kane's up there fairly high. And like, that's where like the whole lineup thing, like Patrick Kane, if you have the last change at home, I don't know if I would want to have Patrick Kane on the ice at any point when Artemi Panarin is, because I would rather have your best defensive minded line on the ice for that moment. And then they get the puck, they get control of the puck, and then you bring, and then you get, or let me backtrack that whole sentence because that was really bad. But the whole idea is like, if Artemi Panarin's on the ice, like, you want your best defensive lineup out there. And then when Panarin's not on the ice, you want to get your offensive guys out on the ice and let them go try and score. Because if they're on the ice together, they kind of cancel each other out. And that's not really what you want to do. This is like a carryover from the Quenneville era when he did what Mill was talking about. You put your defensive line out there, you get the puck back, and then you get your offense out there and let them do offense. Does that make sense?
Yes. And it's not even that it's just Q. Most teams in the National Hockey League roll lines like that. It's a three offensive line, and then their fourth line is a defensive specialist line. Look at Tampa, won two cups with it. Even the Penguins, both their cups were won with that. The Caps were slightly different. They're both their bottom lines could play defense, but, you know, like, special for them. They probably could do it because, like, freaking Ovechkin is a wonderkin. Also, they had better offensive defensemen. But if you go down the line up until the last time there was, like, an energy fourth line that was successful was Boston in 2011. Like, that's a long time for that not to be the structure. So, yeah, you need to be using your fourth line at bare minimum, flipping the ice so that your offensive players can get out there and do something. Don't just go into the zone and keep playing. That's not useful.
And it's also probably how the cap works, that, like, it's cheaper to pay defensive players because they don't put up numbers.
Yeah, exactly. And one of the other things I was going to mention about offense and the whole transition thing that Mill brought up was the Blackhawks don't use their defensemen well at all in transition. In fact, the Blackhawks have some of the worst their defensemen transition the worst in terms of passing. And then also when they're in the zone, helping with shots, they get so many of their shots blocked. Like, we used to joke about Keith hitting shin pads a lot. No. The Blackhawks are the most blocked team in the league, and their defensemen do the bulk of that.
Of course somebody's tracking that now. Like, that makes perfect sense that someone does that. And that's also not surprising that the Hawks are the one. Is that more indicative of players who are bad at getting shots through lanes, or just a team that settles for point shots too often?
Well, I found it was interesting that at one of the practices they were practicing tips, because maybe King and them noticed, hey, we're not getting anything but point shots, even some, like, we're taking all our shots from far out. Maybe instead of it being blocked, we could try to tip a few, but that hasn't happened. Except for Hagel. Hagel tipped a shot.
Yeah, I mean, a big part of that, they don't create shooting lanes at all.
Yeah, no. And part of that is they just don't have the passer in the bottom six, especially. They do not have passers. Like, they can't pass to be able to open up shooting lanes, because that's how you do it. You make the other players move. And the only team that does it the only line that does it regularly was DeBrincat, Doc, and Kane. And now it's Hagel, Taves, and Kane do it a lot. And DeBrincat, Doc, and Strome do it okay.
I guess I'm trying to find, like, the solution to this problem in at least in our minds. And again, I don't think Derek King's listening to this podcast, so I don't think our memo is going to get to the bench, but it's like, I'm just trying to work this around in my head, how you get this team going. Like, I struggle with the idea of, between the two areas of, you know, if Kubalik, you know, catches a heater, or Kane goes off, or Taves goes off for five or six games, and they each score a handful of goals, and everything gets going and everything looks nice. Are we not even having this discussion anymore, because then the offense is clicking?
Well, if they figure it out.
Well, yeah. I guess,
like, yeah. If that's magic. But no, if it's just individual players carrying it, then they didn't correct anything.
So it's more about, like, it's more if you see, like, the team-wide numbers improve, maybe not just because Patrick Kane skated through three players and scored. You want to see more of the possession-based statistics progress in a positive manner. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think the answer to your question, Dave, is something all four of us have been talking about, and it's they have to like, no offense to these guys, but they have to get AHL style players. If they can't play the NHL game, they can't be in the lineup. You know, you can't have Reese Johnson and Mike Hardman out there when they can't play. It's just, it is what it is. Now, if you can get them to do what they need to do and serve a purpose, that's fine, but they're not really serving any purpose.
And stop putting those players, especially on other lines than the fourth line, so that they neuter the other guys even more.
Yeah, exactly.
They're dragging them down.
Yeah. The third line for the last few weeks has been Borgstrom, Kubalik, and Reese Johnson. And that's just,
That's horrible.
It's two-thirds of a really good scoring line. Well, maybe not really good, but maybe a decent depth scoring line.
I would love if they could figure out pairings that work, and then they could tweak that third person. So, so obviously DeBrincat and Strome could work. So maybe slide Doc down to be with Kubalik so that he's got a primary playmaker. Then Doc could maybe focus less on the I'm not scoring as much as I should be, and he could get back to building his confidence up by feeding the puck to Kubalik, and maybe that kills two birds with one stone.
Mm-hmm.
But like, see if they could work together.
Two birds with one Strome.
Yeah. And then, or with Strome. Yeah. And then you could add Borgstrom to either one of those two lines. And it adds another playmaker. It's just like, who's that like last ninth forward? Kurashev would be my selection. And with Kubalik and Doc, that would be my line. Leave Hagel, Taves, and Kane because they're doing well, right?
I mean, they got stomped last night.
Yeah,
but they had an 8% expected goal share.
Yeah, but every other game they do pretty well.
All things considered, health and everything, they might see Reichel eventually.
Yeah,
which is fine. I wouldn't even mind seeing Nylander.
I was just about to say, like, I know, like, everybody in the Hawks fan base is sick of Alex Nylander, but Betsy, you mentioned this last week. I watched a couple Rockford games here and there, and what could it hurt? It's not like anybody else is tearing it up offensively.
Well, good examples of this, Dave, what could it hurt are the AHL guys who come up here and can't play. I know you guys are high on what he can do, but like,
I know I wouldn't say I'm high. I'm just more. I'm not high. I'm willing.
Nylander has more skill than Reese Johnson. I think it's very fair to say, and that's very conservative to say.
No, I'm not saying he doesn't have more skill. He just needs to use it.
Yeah. Well, it's frustrating because even though, like, I don't understand why they're keeping Reese Johnson and Mike Hardman even up, because you could rotate through those types of players from Rockford, even if you're not bringing up a scorer or a hopeful scorer. You could put other players down there, both Barrett. I'm never going to pronounce his name right.
Call him Alti.
Yeah, Alti. And then also Jacob Poor, however you say his last name. He's actually really good. He has good defensive foundation to me. And skates pretty well. So, yeah, if you're looking for grinders, rotate those other assholes out. I'm sure they're nice guys, right?
Yeah.
Rotate them out and let them come in at the very least.
I guess just the overall point that I've been like thinking about the last 24 hours is like we talk, there's a lot of flaws, obviously, and there's a lot of things that don't work, but they're 8-5. Like, I think if you had told me, like, with the scoring slumps of Taves and Kubalik and Kane to an extent, like, if you told me all of that was going to happen and the Hawks were still going to go 8-5 in a 13-game stretch, I'd be like, cool, sign me up. But I think the thing that I'm coming around to, or I've come around to in the last day and then through this conversation, is just, like, it feels like they could be better than just this. There's more potential within this team and this lineup than they are getting right now. And as the schedule starts to toughen up significantly over the next 2 or 3 weeks, maybe that's why they need to start maximizing that potential. Because, I mean, the team, like, they go to Montreal and they're having issues this year, right? Like, Montreal's not good this year, right? I'm not.
No, yeah.
Not really. They fired their GM.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they just blew everything.
That'll do it.
Okay. I had a half second panic attack of like, is Montreal leading the division and I'm an idiot? No, they're not good. But after Montreal, then you've got Toronto and Calgary and Washington again. And then you get some divisional opponents with Nashville and Dallas. And then Florida's good. And then Dallas comes back. And then Columbus may not be great, but Winnipeg's in the playoff chase. Nashville, Calgary, Colorado. And then you get the Arizona Coyotes on January 6th. So you get a little reprieve there. But for the next 3 weeks, like, we're gonna learn a lot about this team, I guess. And I think that's where the concern is, that like they're 8-5, which I just did the math, as a pace of about 100 points over an 82 game season, which would get you into the playoffs. But it feels like, you know, they've played their last four games against all playoff. Well, not the Islanders. They did beat the Islanders. Good for them. But, you know, the Rangers are probably going to be a playoff team. Lost to them twice. And then you needed to, you know, beating Washington was cool, but you did need a shootout. So I just, I don't know. I guess I don't, I'm trying to figure, I guess.
They're 8-5, but they're not going to play Seattle, the Oilers. I mean, not the Canucks and stuff like that over and over again. The the one that I like, the win that I actually like the best was the St. Louis game.
Yeah.
And it went to OT, but like, I still think they played well in that game. And that's a good-ish. I think they're a statistically mediocre team, but they win. They always figure out how to win. So I guess
that's the concern, is that they're getting the results, but the process still could be better. And if your process isn't better, the results are going to stop eventually. Although I still like, I don't know. I feel like it's such a weird situation that they're in, with so many, you know, winning 8 out of 13, but so many offensive guys that are guys that are supposed to be scoring goals are not doing that.
Not going to lie.
Go ahead,
keep going. Yeah, you go, Shay.
They also, to 8 out of 13 against teams they need to beat mostly. Yeah. And like the wins that are like against actual good teams are very rare.
Yeah. And like, I don't want to, they were also very good at losing to the teams they should have beaten for the last 3 years. So, you know, I guess there's an element of, you can't be, you know, can't be too upset about the fact that they were beating bad teams for a change. But yeah, like you were saying, Shay, like any of the teams that are good, and they're coming up this month. So we're going to learn. We're going to learn this month for sure.
Blame it all on Colby Cohen.
I mean, we probably could get away with that.
Tired.
Well, well, we got a few other Blackhawks topics. Well, maybe one or two to get to. We're going to take a quick break, come back on the other side of this timeout, dive into those real quick. We got some food thoughts because, again, as we are self-appointed ourselves the best hockey-themed food podcast on the internet. Or was it the best food-themed hockey podcast on the internet? I don't remember. We're one of those things, and we're going to get into all that stuff after this timeout.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
Welcome back to Musings on Madison here on the Second City Hockey Podcast Network. And as promised before the break, had a few more things we wanted to dive into. And one of them being the big news from Tuesday's game against the Rangers, which was the hit by Jacob Trouba on Jujhar Kara that looked like it just knocked him flat out. And Kara ended up leaving the ice on a stretcher. The good news is that on Wednesday morning, he was released from the hospital and they're expecting a full recovery. So the best part of this is it sounds like Carroll will not be worse for wear in the long term and that he will have a full recovery. It was a little bit scary when it happened because he had two concussions in about a month earlier this year. I think it was in March and April when he was with the Oilers. So kind of a terrifying thing. And I think one of the more interesting parts post game was listening to Jonathan Toews talk about how much that team was rattled by what they witnessed. Like, I can't imagine. I don't know how professional athletes deal with that, watching your teammate get stretchered off. And maybe they don't, like other human beings, that you just can't really go back to work. Maybe that's why the Rangers ended up winning that game. I don't know. But the news came out a few hours ago that Jacob Trouba will not be getting any sort of supplemental discipline for this. And I know I can admit some bias here because I'm a Blackhawks fan, but I can't believe that. Let's get into this. Shay, you were talking about this before we came on the air. So I want you to offer your thought on this, 'cause I think I had a response to it.
I mean, yeah. So he clearly hits him in the head. He looks like Trouba has time to like change and not hit him in the head. And like, it's possible to see that Kyra's got his head down looking at the puck. Like you can, he had time to not hit him in the head. Cause it's like very clearly connects shoulder to head, not like through the neck or through the chest or anything. It's to the head.
Yeah. And I feel like that's been the emphasis for so much of all these NHL, these videos that come out of the Department of Player Safety of the onus is on the checker to not hit the player in the head. And as you mentioned, like, he had time to maybe lower the target. I mean, Kara's like 6'4". He's huge. So plenty of frame to hit that is not his chin. And Trouba kind of like, it seemed like he kind of raised up at the end. So I don't think it was necessarily, like, I don't think this was a dirty hit by any means, because I think dirty hit implies you went out of your, you did something without, outside like the realms of what a normal hockey player would do to make that hit. Like, the knee from Neil Pionk on Rasmus Sandin, I think his name is, from Toronto. Like, that was a pretty cheap hit. That was a dirty hit. And then Spezza coming back and trying to decapitate Pionk later. That's a dirty hit. And Spezza got, I think, got 6 games for that. But this hit doesn't strike me as dirty, but that also doesn't mean it wasn't illegal. And I, it kind of reminds me of the Connor Murphy hit on Eric Sarnak last year against Tampa, where Murphy hit him behind the net, hit him in the head. They reviewed it. Murphy was thrown out of the game. And I saw it and thought that was kind of fair. And this hit, like, I don't understand why something similar didn't happen. I'm not saying Trouba should have got suspended, but the fact
thrown
that he
got game. Sure,
not, yeah, even, not even a minor, nothing at all. When no. they're trying to crack down hits to the head, like, he hit him in the head. Like,
right. There's a reason Stillman had to fight him.
Yeah, well, that, well, did any hard hit gets a fight these days, which is still kind of dumb. Like, but whatever. I don't. Yeah, that's another tirade for another day. Betsy, what about you? What are your thoughts on this?
I agree with Shay. I think that it's not that he was targeting him, but it was a careless play. Like, and he had enough time. He seems to adjust. Trouba seems to adjust a little bit to kind of like opening up, you know, like he kind of stands up a little bit. And the whole point is you're supposed to look out for the dangerous plays. There's that whole thing that's like, well, don't skate with your head down in open ice. And it's like, sure, that's a lesson to teach people, but the way you teach them isn't with concussions, you know, yeah. Like, so I also am a little weird because like, Nathan MacKinnon got suspended earlier this year after Doc like fell a little bit and got, you know, he was almost on his knees and MacKinnon hit him from the side and hit him in the head and into the boards. Now that was more dangerous, but it was the same type of Doc put himself in a like vulnerable position. And yet they still were like, well, Nathan MacKinnon should have pulled up. So why wouldn't they say, well, okay, well, Trouba probably should have pulled up too. That's my only, like, my big thing is I think he could have adjusted a little bit. I know the game is fast, but he also, like, his arm comes up a little bit. So, like, at it almost looks like maybe he's, like, raising his elbow a little bit. And I'm like, and, like, I don't think Trouba is a dirty player. I've watched him a lot. He hits hard, but he's usually very clean. The same way Connor Murphy hits hard, but it's very clean. But I don't necessarily think it was suspension worthy either, but I think it probably needed a penalty of some sort at the very least. I wouldn't have been surprised if it was like a game, but this in between of saying, well, it's not illegal, even though he still hit him in the head and he might've had some time to adjust is kind of wishy-washy to me, yeah, a little bit. And not consistent, which is the biggest complaint everybody has, exactly, with player safety.
Mill, go ahead.
So if you're going to throw out the Trouba had time to adjust, I'll buy that. But also, if there's that much time, Kara has to fucking get his head up. It's so dangerous to keep your head down like, yeah, that. And I really hope yeah, he's okay. But that's something they teach you as a kid. And the reason they do is because if you go online and look up any meatball compilation of hockey hits, it's always guys with their head down going through, you know, the neutral zone. This, unfortunately, was in a different spot. It could have been even more dangerous, closed into the board.
But regardless, I don't like the hit for sure. But I don't think Jacob Trouba is the type of player that had dangerous intent. Like, right. I think if it was a player who had a track record, they might have done something because they would have thought, oh, okay, like, you know. But if he had, or if he had his head up, I think they would have called a penalty, maybe kicked him out of the game, because they definitely don't want these types of hits. But if you want consistency and you give him some kind of game misconduct, well, then they're going to look at 1,000 other hits similar where guys had their heads down and there was no penalty, and they're going to go, well, why didn't these get those calls? Yeah. I just don't think it's black and white. It's very tricky. The game is changing. You know, years ago, this wouldn't even been a discussion. It would have been like, whatever, which is stupid, but that's how it was. So I think it's good that we're looking after people's safety. And maybe they should have called at least a minor penalty at least, but it's just not so black and white. I just hope Kara's okay. Like, that's my thing, because like, that hit was really nasty to watch.
And also, I was going to mention that Trouba, whenever they panned him, looked shaken.
Yeah. Like, right. Yeah.
That's he the thing. Did not, like, not expect it to be like that. So
that's the thing, is that he's not like a jackass where he wants to hurt people.
Yeah. I think sometimes people get penalties and get thrown out or get suspensions that aren't jackasses because they accidentally did something, and it's always good. My thing about consistency is it's not even consistent in season. Like, it's one thing if you're talking about, like, okay, last season they would never call that, but like, there have been similar hits that have gotten suspensions this season, and it's like, just pick a lane or explain it better. Like, maybe give an explanation video of why you did.
Maybe they need to start doing videos explain why we're not suspending people.
That's a good point, because I go back to the Murphy hit last year. Again, he's not a dirty player whatsoever. I just think that the way the angle, you know, and behind the net, the way it was, if they didn't call something like that, they knew some dirty player was going to take advantage of that. Mm-hmm. But like, this was like a, hey, like, this dude had, you know, you can't look down at the puck even for that long. But I think we can all agree that we just hope the dude is okay, because it was very hard to look at.
Yeah, I know. That was the best news that came out of everything, was when the report this morning that I think the Hawks even said, like, they are expecting him to make a full recovery. I'm actually,
they use the word excellent.
Yeah, his prognosis is excellent, and we expect a full recovery. So that's good news. Yeah.
I'd also like to mention that a player who has experience with head hits and concussions, and Andrew Shaw tweeted today that the Chujar should have been protected. So that's a player perspective.
Yeah, I think it's like, again, this is the gray area that Mill referenced. Like, I can appreciate, or I can understand the argument from people who say, keep your head up, because like, you can't, this is a very physical, very dangerous game. And if you skate around with your head down, eventually you're going to get blasted. Like, that's, if you can't skate.
Yeah. I think we're at a point, especially with concussions and the understanding of CTE, that like, at this point you shouldn't have to fully expect a head hit at all times.
Well, both things can be true though. Like you can't skate, you should not be skating around with your head down, because you do have to protect yourself, but also there has to be some ramification if a guy, you know, hits you in the head. And like, I think someone mentioned, like, if you, like, I have it open, I'm rewatching this hit, and like, Kerr kind of like, he raises up slightly. So like, there's room to hit him, not in his head. I think we mentioned this earlier. Like,
yeah.
No
ramifications at all. Just seems wrong to me. Like, even if you're just going to find him $1,000, still find him $1,000.
Yeah. That's where I can, like, nothing at all, no penalty, nothing. Like, I think suspension might be a little much, because again, like, I don't think it was a dirty hit, but dirty doesn't necessarily mean illegal. I mean, if you high stick and knock a guy's couple of his teeth out, it might have been just an accident, but it's still a 4-minute penalty because you made his mouth bleed. Yeah. So
they sit there and say you have to be aware of where, like, your stick at all times. And even if you accidentally do something with your stick, you still get penalized. Why shouldn't players, even if they don't intend to hit somebody in the head, should they not be, like, they do that all the time. They're like, well, they might not have targeted, but it's an illegal check to the head.
Yeah. I mean, like, I'm watching it, like, the Zapruder film, like, frame by frame, like, it certainly looks like the first contact is Trouba's shoulder to Kara's chin. And And it looked like he was out midair, and that's why his head cracked off the ice so hard.
Yeah, his head gets thrown back so hard, and then Trouba hits him in the chest a little bit because his momentum is still going, but his head whips back.
Yeah, so I don't know. It's just, and in the long run, I'm glad he's okay, and hopefully we don't have to talk about anything else like that anymore.
Only thing I want to add is I wish Riley Stillman would, if he's going to fight, don't get your ass beat.
Right? That's the other thing. Like, at least win the get a few punches in, or what the fuck's Reese Johnson on this team for if he's not going to fight somebody?
Yeah, also, it's like, why bother?
Why is it that the littler players fight better than on the Blackhawks? Because Shaw fought better than pretty much everybody.
It's because a lot of those guys wouldn't make the team the way you have to come up if you don't fight a lot. The coaches ask you to do that.
But what about Grinkit? I think he's a better fighter than Stillman is.
That's not being a Napoleon combo.
Well, Grinkit
fight his entire career.
He's a good player, so they probably tell him, please don't do that.
Oh, I'm sure they do, but when he does,
he makes
contact. He's a better formed fighter than, I don't know, if he went against Trouba, he'd be hitting him in the tummy, but you know.
this goes back to this is an ancient episode of when Bomani Jones used to do things on SB Nation. He talked about undersized running backs in the NFL are probably the toughest people pound for pound in all sports because – To be into the NFL and be an undersized player at a position where you get physically beat up all the time, the amount of toughness it takes to do that, those are not people you want a part of. And I imagine smaller hockey players are probably in a similar category. Like all the shit that Alex DeBrincat and the Andrew Shaws of the world have had to hear over the course of their careers because of how undersized they were. And all the times they probably had to prove that they were as tough as all the big guys. I don't think, for the most part, those aren't problems that you would like to have. So I think that's where that comes from.
Also, I appreciate Andrew Shaw's take, but at the same time, has taken runs at so many people I'm kind of like, dude, that's rich. Like, come on.
Yeah, he's not the best advocate for that side of the argument, but whatever.
I think he learned it with his injuries. Like, I think.
Okay, I was going to say, I feel like he and Bolin does the same thing sometimes. You know, you're like, but that was your entire career, bro. but then you're like, they realize the NHL has. Changed a little bit. So,
It's just the wisdom of getting a little bit older. You know, they're not 23 anymore. So maybe,
but it's funny.
It is funny. So real quickly before we start to wrap this up here, looking at the games for the next few weeks. And again, as we mentioned, we're gonna learn a lot over the next 2 to 3 weeks here. Thursday night against Montreal in Montreal. Then they play Saturday night against the Maple Leafs in Toronto, which. We're going to find out how good that defense is because that team is scoring goals a lot. So there's that. And then they come home and face the Calgary Flames. So that's going to be, and then we get the Capitals again on Wednesday. So
the return of Nikita Zadorov who blew the game for them.
Can't wait. And Milanay might be in the house for that. We'll see. We're talking to some people doing some things. We'll see. But anyway, before we wrap this all up, we got a food take. It's the holiday season. And I have this, airing of grievances in line with Festivus traditions. I don't know where I'm going with that, but anyway, we talked a lot about holiday food last week and comparing Thanksgiving to Christmas. And I think cookies came up at some point. So I have a take related to this topic. Sugar cookies suck. Why do sugar cookies even exist? All other forms of cookies have sugar in them. So why do we have cookies that are just sugar? They're trash. Get them away from the rest of my cookies. Why they're just no, we don't need sugar cookies are trash. That is the take. Tell me I'm wrong.
It's to decorate them. It's because other cookies can't be decorated as a cookie baker. It's because other cookies aren't as good.
Deck the halls. Why are you decorating cookies? Cookies
because it's fun and you use icing and it's colorful and it's nice and kids can do it.
Is this art class?
Kids can do it. It's crafts.
Come on.
It's edible crafts. That's why.
I understand what you're saying if you're talking about store-bought sugar cookies, but if you make them at home with a ton of butter and unhealthy shit, they're really good.
So you have to make them more unhealthy than they already are.
That's to keep up with the other unhealthy cookies.
Yeah, all cookies are unhealthy, Dave. This is a fact of life. Yeah, we can't all eat cookies at all times.
I wish we could. I wish we could all be Cookie Monster.
Which is even more reason of why you shouldn't waste your time eating sugar cookies. You should eat good cookies.
Question.
Sugar cookies?
Okay.
Oh, the right ones are good. Yeah. The right ones are good. The right ones are good.
Yeah, they are.
Snickerdoodles are a type of sugar cookie because they're sugar cookies with cinnamon. What's your stance on them?
They're fine.
Because I fucking love snickerdoodles.
I mean, look, chocolate chip is the best cookie, period.
No.
What?
What?
I don't.
What's a better cookie than a chocolate chip cookie?
I just told you a snickerdoodle is my favorite.
I kind of roll with a peanut butter or an M&M.
You know, like
I'm a peanut butter chocolate chip.
They're called turtle. They're turtle pecan cookies.
Yeah.
What?
Turtle cookies. They have caramel bits. They have they're like chocolate chips with pecans in them and little bits of caramel.
I'm familiar with the candy that's called a turtle, but that's a candy. That's not a cookie.
No, there's.
Where are the turtles?
First of all, it's a well-known enough cookie that like Nestle House and Pillsbury have them in the snap off and break, whatever, place and break.
Okay.
Place and bake ones. So they're common enough cookie.
Okay. I just Googled it and got some images. Now I understand what you're talking about. But like I'm thinking of like they've made like turtle cookies, but and I'm thinking of the actual turtles.
Is a magic bar cookies. Is a magic bar a brownie or a cookie?
I think it's a cookie.
Then
are we talking about the 7-layer bar? Because yes. That's a cookie.
Yeah, okay. Then that's
those my are favorite good as
cookie.
Hell.
I think there has to be like just like plain dough in it for it to be a cookie.
But that's a plain dough is a sugar cookie.
Well, that's the base of the ingredient. I'm just saying, like that has to be.
Yeah, the base of the ingredient is a sugar cookie. Yeah, like, you just bake that. That's simple. And, one of the reasons they exist is that it's just simplicity and it's the base of every other cookie.
Yeah,
but it's the base,
and it can be improved upon, which is why it's trash.
A cookie is just a baked or cooked snack or dessert that is typically small, flat, and sweet. So
that's a Snickers bar. Then, like, come on. I guess they're not baked.
I was gonna say a Snickers bar is not.
You want me to go bake one and find out?
I might.
White chocolate macadamia nut. I kind of fuck with that cookie.
Those are pretty good. Like
like an occasional one, you know.
I guess magic bars are. Yeah, I think they're more cookie than brownie.
I think they're more cookie too. The thing with those is though, you can only have it like once in a while because they'll just they'll ruin your stomach.
What makes a magic bar? So I think a magic bar is closer to a cookie than a brownie because there's nothing brownie about it to me. Like it doesn't rise at all. So how can it be a brownie?
Right, it just sinks.
There's nothing brownie. It doesn't rise because
there's so much shit in it. Yeah.
It condenses.
There's nothing to make it.
So, Dave, what you're saying is you don't like the sugar cookies that look like Christmas trees at Family Express.
No, I don't. Oh, those are like the ones.
Oh, yes. Okay. That's a good point.
But those
what's your stance? Go ahead.
Those are just two. Those are excessive amounts of sugar. They're unnecessary. They're not good. But go ahead, Shay. What were you going to say?
What? So have you had like the Pillsbury like shapes ones, like the reindeer or the Christmas tree recently, where it's just like peel in place?
Maybe. I don't. Well, not recently. No, I haven't had many holiday cookies yet. It is only December 8th. We got 3 weeks.
No, it's like, well, remember growing up, the cookies that you buy like those and you bake them at home and they have like pictures on them.
I
mean, they do like Halloween.
Those are sugar cookies.
Yeah, fine.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. So sorry, I will upgrade from sugar cookies are no longer trash. They are fine, but you can do so much better. If you're settling for sugar cookies, you're settling, and this is not the season for settling.
Again, it's to decorate. It's because they look good. It's the aesthetic. They are an aesthetic cookie.
Yeah, and then
you're like an interactive cookie. Okay,
I interact with every cookie because I eat.
That's a good one. I like
they're Instagram cookies.
Yeah. All right. Well, I don't have an Instagram account, so fuck him.
You should get one.
What? No, it's all right. I'm good.
No, I'm just quoting Samuel Jackson on that Capital One commercial. You should get one. Motherfucker.
Too old for Instagram. If it was going to happen, it was going to happen 15 years ago.
Dude, Instagram's all people that are like older. It's fine.
that's okay, Mel. You guys have fun with it. I'm gonna be okay. Getting angry on people on Twitter about that are tweeting our account, telling us we don't like the team that hasn't been good for 5 years.
On Twitter, as Twitter slowly dies.
God, and not a day late.
We need a Second City burner account to back us up.
By the way, you can follow us on Twitter at 2NTCityHockey.
Hockey fans.
Exactly. I promise we're not as obnoxious on Twitter as we are on this podcast, but we are. I don't know. Well, somebody will tweet us and let us know. I think that's going to pretty much wrap it up for this episode. Any final thoughts before we go our separate ways?
I'm glad you don't have to sit through a JV game tonight.
Yeah, me too. Well, I usually show up after the JV game, so it's
okay. Yeah, but you'll be done earlier.
Exactly. That's the whole point. Betsy, Shay, anything else to add?
Nope.
I'm good too.
All right.
I'm gonna make magic bars this weekend.
Ship some up north, please. Appreciate it. But that's going to do it for this episode of Musings on Madison. Thank you very much for listening to this episode. Again, I'm on Twitter at @SCH_DaveM, which I promise we're more fun there than I just said we were. Mill is at Millen82. Shepherd is at Shepherd Price. The main account's at 2ND City Hockey. Betsy's not on Twitter, but you can find her at secondcityhockey.com under the name LBR. And that's where you can find all of our stuff, all our previews, all our recaps, all our Number Munchers series articles. Everything is all at that website in one nice convenient package for you. So thanks again for listening to this episode. We'll be back next week with another one talking about whatever the hell's going on. Go get your COVID shots and boosters, please, so maybe we don't have to have empty stadiums for coming up sometime soon, because it sounds like shit might be getting real once again, especially for those of us in the northern half of the country. So I highly recommend doing that. But that's going to do it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.